Recording with the one and only Jorge Webb on Super Bowl Sunday, on Sunday, February 12th, 2023, at 2:18 p.m. Eastern Time. And we were just talking beforehand about how easy it is for a to bully your elders. I texted Georgia last night because actually a friend of mine called me last night and was like, "Have you heard about H5N1?" And I was like, "Actually, George Webb was just tweeting about, or we were just texting about it like 10 minutes prior." And so I texted George and I was like, "Hey, let's do an episode tomorrow." And he goes, "I can't, it's Super Bowl Sunday." And I just said one word. I just said gay. And he folded like a cheap suit, going, "All right, let's do it." And in only the way you can bully your elders, as I'm sure I've done before, I've had younger guests tell me, just like a single word, "Bussy," and just, "All right, well, I'll cave." But George, how are you doing, man?
Tommy, just for you, I wore my Boston Consulting Group teal green shirt today.
Oh, thank you, sir.
And this is in special honor of Jordan Walker, who we now have confirmed not only worked for Boston Consulting Group at Pfizer, like I told James O'Keefe live in front of 5,000 people, but he also worked for Boston Fed. And we also have produced the contract, it's out on my Twitter, for doing what? Controlling the communications messaging for Operation Warp Speed and COVID. Pretty good for a intern that washed out of his first year of internship at Tufts.
Do you think there's any somebody, and it's kind of it's as simple as remember right when Russia invaded Ukraine, and everyone that had half a brain cell thought they were being quick, and they're like, "Watch out for Taiwan. China's gonna move on." Like everyone became General Eisenhower overnight. There's kind of the same thing going on with, right, like the balloon incursions. There's the first was last weekend, which was shot down, and then there was another I think on Thursday, which I talked with Gordon Chang about yesterday, shot down over Alaska. And then as soon as he and I finished that episode, another one was shot down over Canada. And then after that, the airspace over the ICBM bases in Montana were temporarily closed. And I think reopened. And as of this morning, I think the Chinese Air Force said they were pursuing a UFO, I want to say off the coast of South America. My point of saying all of this is, and it warms my heart as a conspiracy head, that it's like it's growing in popularity. It's like seeing a band that you saw in a garage start to like trend on like, Billboard 100, and everyone's like, "It's Project Bluebeam." And part of me is thrilled that everyone's as detached from reality as me. But do you think there's any coincidence to all of this happening? Is this a distraction from classified documents at Biden's residence? Is this a distraction from just the ever crumbling border? Is this a distraction from sending more and more armaments to Ukraine, including Abrams tanks and Leopard tanks? Is this a distraction from the big tech hearings where power, ironically and coincidentally, went out right during the hearing? Just throwing everything at the wall.
Well, yes and no.
Great answer. George is running for office as he has learned Pentagonese.
No, I'd say, have you had Dr. Andrew Huff on? Have you interviewed
Yeah,
him yet?
Last Monday, not even a
That's
week ago.
somebody told me you interviewed him, and people should check out that interview because,
He's a cool guy.
yeah, he's a really smart guy, and he knows all about, he's the one of the worldwide experts on what they call digital detection. And this is all the things that happen on the ground that tip off what's actually, that you can see from the sky, that tip off what's actually happening on the ground. So if you see a whole bunch of fire trucks going out on the tarmac toward a burning plane or a burning train in East Palestine, Ohio, you can kind of guess, you see a smoke plume, that there was a train accident or a plane accident. And this can be seen from space, or it could be seen from a drone or a balloon or what have you. And they're so good at it because they did this digital detection for Metabiota in China before the breakout of COVID, So all these stories kind of have a little bit of a Venn diagram overlap, and I'm going to try to answer them all as one big Venn diagram.
Okay.
But one of the things you would do if you had a you couldn't get access and you had top secret clearance on doing digital detection for the next thing that's happening, the next breakout, let's say it was H5N1, you couldn't necessarily go to National Reconnaissance Organization and say, hey, download all your files to me. And they would go, well, you're over there at USDA running a crop study program. What do you need my files for? Okay, let's just say. Or it just becomes too many people get involved in being, you know, in the soup here. So why don't we just run our own balloon and we'll, just like a satellite, do a swath across the sky, and it'll be super high res, just like Mike Flynn's balloons that he used in Afghanistan with one Adam Schiff, which is the Aerostar balloon. Pasternak and Aerostar were working with Adam Schiff. You know the whole story, the Humpty Dumpty Society, Mark Epstein from Congress, all that stuff. So it is a really good way. And some of the telltales, and this is outlined in Andrew Huff's book, which is what really happened in Wuhan. And then I can't remember the subtitle, but it says,
like the biggest cover up in history or something.
Something like that. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
But he basically talks about when people get sick, really sick, they drive to a hospital usually. And their cars stay there a long time, especially if a loved one's sick. You know, the cars go back and forth to the hospital a lot. Or the cell phones travel to the hospital. Normally, cell phones don't travel to hospitals by themselves. Or people start Googling diarrhea and all the other symptoms, right? And people normally don't do that for fun. So all those things, when you throw them all together and they kind of Venn diagram into a tableau, you can say, hey, this is an outbreak of such and such. And the same thing is true for farmers. If you're growing chickens and let's say there's a breakout of the avian flu, all of a sudden the animals act differently. The farmers spend more time in the chicken coop than they normally might have, et cetera. The farmer brings in the vet. The vet's car is there where the vet's car normally never is there. So if you really think all these scenarios through, like Huff has, it really makes sense that the balloon is looking for something that they don't want you to know about. Mm-hmm. If they wanted you to know about, if they didn't want you to see the last balloon, they wouldn't have shown it to you at the end. But typically at the end of these projects, and my theory is the balloons have been going since January 2001 or 2020, sometime around there. And now they're just showing the last balloon. Now we're at the end of the story. And they're putting them randomly in all kinds of places to generate as many conspiracy theories as possible, because they don't want the story coming out that they've been doing this swath of Montana to South Carolina over and over and over.
Hmm.
My theory.
So, yeah. And I mean, and to anyone that might, you know, your knee jerk might be January 2020. Well, it's February 2023. No, I mean, that is the, you know, all the jokes about a balloon being archaic. It's also, there's a reason, I think in 2004, DARPA was researching, I mean, insane loiter times, right? There's next to no fuel. I mean, what is the fuel? A solar powered propeller. And it's, you know, you can get high altitude, exert very low energy. You're lower than a satellite. You can potentially maneuver it. Sure, you could throw up an X-37B, but I mean, those are like $1 billion a launch and we have like two of them. So there's, again, that sort of Venn diagram of usefulness. And then everything you were just saying about digital detection, that seems like something that's, I would imagine, has morphed out of the Cold War, as much of our technology does. Is that was a thing, right? When there's a new plant out in California and the Soviets would watch it, it wasn't just that they had trawlers off the coast, you know, trying to pick up Elint or satellites. You also want to see, well, how many cars are there? Is it an empty building? Are they throwing you on a wild goose chase? Is it something like Raven Rock, where there's just a single security hut, and it's like, huh, what is that? why is there a 600 car parking garage in a field? Well, it's, well, then you start to conclude there's something under the field. So you can kind of use your own critical thinking to detect something going on. So that's the idea of the balloon, is that they're watching something that digital detection has, I guess, pointed someone in. Like Dr. Stephen Hatfield talks about it in his book, is it 3 Seconds to Midnight? About all these things, about, yeah, Google searches, Facebook titles. Has anyone noticed these symptoms? And you have all these algorithms pick it up, and it's, this is happening over here. Kind of along those lines.
Yeah, and I think that's exactly right. And it does come out of the Cold War, and the YouTube spy plane, you know, Lee Harvey Oswald, you know, is the beginning of it all. As a matter of fact, they did say the original U2, when Gary Powers was shot down, was a weather balloon that had gone off course.
That's the first thing that made me laugh about I was like, that's our line. That's,
yeah.
it's my corny boomer joke is, yeah, I mean, China plagiarizes everything, including our lies. Like, that's our fucking line.
And if you think about it, digital detection and telling everybody about it makes your data less valuable. Your data metabiota, let's say, and this is getting to the classified documents, is much more valuable if you have it right before the outbreak in Wuhan, because you could say, here are all the antecedents that led up to this. So we spied for China, or we shot pictures for China. Now it's China's turn to shoot pictures for us. And again, it feeds the metabiota machine, feeds the big data machine. And now we can say, well, if one chicken dies here, that means 58 people die in Schenectady. You know, that the butterfly effect, you know, that comes from these plannings. Therefore, we must do this. We must buy, Pfizer must convert 18 factories in 18 GOP states where there's chickens to animal vaccine. And here's the money.
Yeah. And you often want to do it quietly, not just for information asymmetry in war and in investing, right? But also the idea of public panic, right? It's something you do very quietly, right?
Well, and if you're going to build a Pfizer plant in your, let's say, there's one in Kansas, not far from the new, you know, Plum Island out there in the middle of Kansas, Manhattan, Kansas. But let's say you wanted to build one in Nebraska, let's just say, and or Oklahoma. And you say, okay, let's make it about pigs and just say swine flu and have a small breakout, have the digital detection, take the digital detection to Defense Threat Reduction Agency, go get the money. Money comes back to the governor. He's got a pile of money. Now Borla, CEO of Pfizer, comes to the place I was yesterday, National Governors Association meeting. And behind closed doors, you work out the plan to build the next Pfizer plant in, you know, Lincoln, per se. And that's why I predict three new Pfizer plants, animal or human, I don't know which, in GOP states. But the eventual goal here to expand the footprint for Pfizer is to have a Pfizer plant in every state, so that no governor will ever be able to vote against Pfizer again. And the same thing is true for any senator. There are some safe House seats that will always be safe, so people will be able to say either one, but no senators. Because when you pass the NDAA, the National Defense Authorization, it's always 98-1.
Yeah.
Or, you know, Bernie Sanders is the only guy.
Yeah.
Who's got, you know. So that's my prediction. That's what it feels like.
It is always kind of funny when you see like the voting record of like the defense budget or something, everything else, it really is. I mean, not to be like edgy, but it really is like bread and circus screaming, you know, tranny bathrooms, no abortions, keep whatever. And then when it comes to the $1 trillion to keep that war machine chugging along, everyone's fucking all aboard. Like Democrats and Republicans are shoveling the coal into the machine together. Like we gotta go bomb some foreign nations. But
F-35 is made in 47 different states.
You read my mind. I was about to say, I think it was Lockheed, at the risk of slandering them. It might have been Boeing. I don't know. We'll just, for the risk of slander, we'll say it was me. I'm a defense contractor. But there is some actual term, like an actual definition, that they like unofficially have their own, I guess, team. And it's about, it's like the science of lobbying. You find who needs votes, who is going to vote for that war machine. And, you know, Tommy, you're running for Congress and whatever. Yeah, you're all against the war machine. Well, what if you could? It looks like unemployment's rising there. Have you guys ever thought about, I don't know, making landing gear for an F-35? And I'm like, no, I haven't thought about that. And they're like, well, I mean, we were thinking to put this plant in this bumblefuck town, because you would imagine, right? You look back to like the 1880s, like a town grew because it was next to a railroad or next to a river or next to a natural resource. But when it's 2023 and it's like, why are they making the radar absorbing material in Skokie, Illinois? Like what's there? And well, there's a congressman who needs to get elected. And so when you wonder why there's this sprawling Air Force plant in the same town where like Napoleon Dynamite was filmed, and you go, what is the tactical? There is no tactical. It's somebody's getting into Congress. And so why, but to follow that train of thought, why wouldn't that then go down to the bio defense industrial complex? Why would that tried and true method not trickle down? And well, the answer is it is trickling down.
And I use the same methodology. I have, it's analog detection, but I have my eyes, and I sit in the Marriott Marquis Hotel for 2 days, and, you know, have my iced tea, you know, and they're about ready to throw me out every 2 hours or so. But I just watch and see which people are the contractors spending the most time with, which governors, entourages, are they spending time with the GOP people? Are they spending time with the Democrats? They're not spending any time with the Democrats. They've already got those states. Gretchen Whitmer has a $750 million commitment. So they've already taken the money. She's a young global leader. Her deputy governor is a young global leader. This Gilchrist, the attorney general is like a roommate of Metabiota. Nathan, so it's just, you can't get any schwabier, you know. So say they got $750 million already. New York just gave $470 million a year ago for Pearl River Pfizer. And I just think this is, you know, a Project Veritas, when they do the big hit piece, you know, where they're going to do the attack ambush video, they forgot where they're going, where Borla's going into. He's going in to meet with the Republican governors. And they're talking about, why is Borla talking to all the Republican governors if they're not talking about plants and or the coming H5N1, which means you get a plant? It's what they're talking about. They were also talked about raising the debt limit so that they can get the revenue sharing money to come back, so that they can get U.S. Department of Homeland Security money for building plants. And the same strategy has been done by the USAID Predict program overseas. You have a small little breakout. You send a whole bunch of germ team in, the Bill Gates germ team in, before it was called Bill Gates germ team. They send the data back and they say, well, we need a Navy medical research unit here. We need a BSL-4 lab here. And then bup, 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 all over the world, you end up with these labs.
Dr. Andrew Huff talks about the USAID program in his book, The Truth About Wuhan, which is, for anybody interested, it's a week ago. You go find it. It's his books. It's pretty quick where you'd get it on Kindle. You can have your iPhone read it to you. But he goes in about it and he talks about it. He's like, yeah, you have this moment when you're in this program that you think that, you know, we're going around the world and we're really trying to put out these little fires of these things. He goes, and then you look into it more and you realize, like, no, we're going to get samples of this thing. We want to go see how this thing works. This is, nature is building weapons for us. I think Dr. Francis Boyle said that as well in his book. I had him on last year. Yeah, we have this idea of all these things go around the world and we're like, oh my gosh, what is going on? This giraffe's bleeding from its eyes. We got to go get a sample of that immediately and bring it back and find out what the genome is and see how we weaponize it. It's a little disheartening.
Well, I would alter that a little bit and say, okay, what they're really doing is getting the backbone of those things so that they can put human antigens on there to make it look like a human virus, and then say it came from the giraffe bleeding from its eyeballs.
Oh.
So now the giraffe bleeding from his eyeballs, let's say that's an Ebola type of thing. That's important because the antigen is going to have a certain epitope, you know, on it that is going to have a certain binding affinity. And then they can look at that with a computer model and go, okay, well, what does that receptor look like on a giraffe? Now, what does it look like on a human? And it's going to be slightly different. That's why we're not infected. That's why the HIV, not HIV, HIV did work, but the bat coronavirus never infected monkeys, never infected humans. HK1 is as close as they got to actually infecting. And this is the whole, where the whole story falls apart about it came from bats. Well, the bat virus doesn't infect humans. The only way it does is if you take the human antigen and put it on a bat backbone, then you put it into a mouse and it will infect the mouse, right? The humanized mice of Ralph Baric. But it won't infect if you just grab the HK1 spike and put it into a mouse or a human. It's just a totally fake story. That's why it has to be the lab leak or a lab spread. So there we go. But that's why I do think they go collect all these samples, because they want you to think it comes from the bleeding giraffe, you know?
I guess for a simpleton like me, I think like right now we're doing this podcast on a Mac. All the podcasts are done on a Mac. Apple won't sponsor me. I don't think they sponsor anyone, but they won't sponsor me, and I do take it personally. I also last year started a video game channel with my buddies, and I do it on a PC. And it is as lowbrow and as worthless of content as you can imagine. But nonetheless, I like it. And every week I take the podcast and I offload it on to some external hard drives in case something happens to my computer. And about a year ago, I started doing it with my shitty gaming channel. But I realized that I couldn't, because all my hard drives are connected to my Mac, so I would just put everything on an external on the PC, come over here, plop it into the Mac, and dump it onto the externals, because I've got oodles and boodles of terabytes. And it wouldn't transfer. And I never realized that that was the difference between a difference between a PC and a Mac is, and it, again, I'm sure most people knew this, I didn't, is that you can't transfer it. And there is like a third type of file you can save it under that is, I guess, translatable, readable by a Mac and a PC. I think it's called XFAT or something. I don't know. I don't understand any of this. But the point is you do have to sort of convert it to make it even usable. So if my Mac was destroyed by a virus and somebody said, oh, it came from your gaming channel and it's as a result of all of your hate speech or something, I would have to logically call bullshit. And I'd be like, no, somebody took it. There was human intervention and they made it a translatable file, because it cannot jump between the two. They don't read each other. It doesn't work that way. Am I anywhere close to an understanding?
You're absolutely right on. And we talked about Marion Koopmans from the Erasmus Lab taking the backbone, going to the Chinese Academy of Sciences, going to the Chinese Academy of Military Sciences, and doing exactly that, taking the bat backbone, putting human antigens on it. And then once you have that, then you can create a virus-like nanoparticle, right? And then you can release that in any temperature condition. You don't have to freeze it. You can create all the symptoms of the disease to simulate, but doesn't spread, to simulate what'll be happen when you do the real live exercise. So it's kind of like a pre-live exercise, if you will.
Yeah.
And that's what we always said that Wuhan was. April, September, October, you don't want to do the real live one until you do the one that doesn't spread first, because you want to see what's the initial rush to the hospitals. And then you compare that with a live attenuated virus, and then you'll see the secondary. You'll see the initial wave, and then you'll see the secondary from infection, because you want to get an idea of the R value, the infection rate.
Okay.
Right. And so you want to take snapshots, R1, R2, R3, you know, day one, day two, day three, day four. And then you can see a spread. How long does it take me to go from patient zero to patient 1 million? It's usually about 2 months. Andrew Huff will know that on the top of his head. That's why he says it couldn't have started in November. It had to have started late September, mid-September, and was going full force in October when the military games were, is what he says in his book, which agrees with what I've said for a long time, 2 years.
I think I'm picking up what you're putting down. It's the idea of, like, there's kind of two ideas. One of them is moronic, and the other one's a little less stupid. So we'll start with the dumb one. Grand Theft Auto 5, you're constantly, there's throughout the entire campaign, you're doing like four or five heists throughout the whole thing. You're just robbing banks, whatever, killing cops. Real in-depth plot, right? And but one of them, you go and you hit a tiny bank out in the middle of nowhere, and they want to know what the response time is. And so they go and they see like an alarm. As the guy just takes out his like silence pistol, just shoots the alarm from across the street. And they're like, let's just gauge the response time. We just want to see what's going on. And like a disproportionate amount of cops show up. And they're happy that they did it because they thought they're in the middle of nowhere. Maybe two cops are going to show up. But like 15 squad cars show up. And then that goes into the whole plot. Well, that bank is laundering money for the cops, so it's harder to rob. And then the cops realize somebody tripped the alarm on purpose. So they start doing a traffic ID check, whatever. The other idea is, I think, Nicole, is it Perlman? Her book, This Is How They Tell Me the World Ends, about zero-day exploits, in which, back to that information asymmetry, you want to find an exploit in some system, but you don't want anyone to know you have it. The idea of a zero-day exploit is they've had 0 days to defend against it, right? My door locks. That's not a zero-day exploit. Someone would want to know that, oh, the drywall above my podcast studio is soft, and if you really wanted to, you could come punch right through and interrupt the podcast. I have 0 days to prepare for that. Once you do it, I now know that I need to put up a barrier there, so it loses its edge. So if I'm kind of even remotely getting close to what you're saying, is that you don't even want to do the attenuated thing. You want to do like an attenuated thing. You want to do barely the symptoms to just see how people respond. You're firing a gun in the air just to see how long it takes for cops to get to that area. Am I remotely anywhere near it, or should
If you look at actually what happened, or at least what I was told would happen by my old research partner, is that you go ahead and create a virus-like particle from what you're going to release. You go ahead and put it in vapes. So she had said, this gal named Task Force had said, that would be put in this vaping compound, and it would be 1,000 times concentration what you'd normally breathe on the street, but it would get you quick to lung injury, and people would be going to hospitals and they would be taking pictures of damaged lungs, and you would see what exactly that looked like versus smoking too much, or smoking too much CBD, or smoking too much tobacco, or other kinds of lung injury, red lung from being too close to a steel worker, or black lung from being a coal miner, all these things. So you want to be able to say, you know, picture, that's what COVID-19 is going to look like. This crazy paving, well, it wasn't crazy paving, it was called a ground glass presentation for the lung. So it looks like a bunch of fine glass, that the white spots are the spots where the pockets of villi have filled up. And then you want to be able to go to a hospital system and have a deep learning system that says, give me all the chest x-rays that are happening on a day-to-day basis in the lab, and tell me when one looks like this. Okay. Now, this is what I think Michael Callahan did in six hospitals around the Wuhan area. They release the VLP, which, remember, it's not a real living thing. So if you release it in smoke, like let's say factory smoke, you're good to go. You know, it doesn't kill the virus because it's not alive. It's just a VLP. Okay. But people breathe it in, a virus-like particle.
Gotcha.
But people breathe it in, they all of a sudden get lung irritation, they go to the hospital, right? This happened. This is what Andrew Huff says. He saw particulate matter of 0.25 microns that he thought it was because the crematoriums were working overtime in September and October in Wuhan. But he looked at it with satellite images and said this. Okay. Now, I tied this to vaping in July and August near Virginia, and then it turned out that E-Valley damages were in like went 33 different states. It was a lot of different states, but some people died from this. But it mainly was looking at what is the presentation going to look like in the lungs. We looked at a couple of hospitals. Fort Belvoir Community Hospital was the key one we looked at and said, if they're going to be doing any comparison, this military hospital is the one, because they sold these vape products at that PX there on that base. But this wasn't the only base they sold them on. It was in different bases. So that's the first one. Now you know what to look for. Now you know what the virus is going to look like downstream. You have a big deep learning system. The guy who left, Bob Malone's Alchem, lived in Tampa, but he worked up at University of Florida. He specialized in this. He specialized in looking through hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of lung images and be able to pick out which ones are COVID and which ones are not. Flu looks different, a little bit different than COVID, for instance. And you have to be able to discern the difference between those two. You may want to lump them together and say they're all COVID if you're trying to create a false narrative. But you get the idea what I'm saying. And he literally fled. I went to where he lived and worked and everything. He literally fled when COVID broke out, like a month before. But now you run the real live attenuated virus, because you have a baseline now of what it should look like, right? And now you can compare the live attenuated versus the real deal. And it's a way of kind of controlling the genie in the bottle. Mm. You don't want to just let out the live attenuated without having, you know, if you, for instance, if you had from the particulate matter, from the virus-like particle, if you had 1,000 people a day in Wuhan, 15 million people coming into the hospital with this presentation, right? That was your non-infectious. And then all of a sudden you had 1,000 the first day, and then you had 8,000 the next day. You'd say, whoa, we're way out of control here. We're eight times where we need to be, and it's going to be exponential. So we got to stop on the live attenuated, no more spreading the live attenuated. We're hitting our goals as it is. So it just gives you some kind of baseline. And if you're really smart about it, you would do several cities differently. So you'd have a baseline in Kunming, you'd have a baseline in, you know, various cities, Nanjing, et cetera. And then you'd have the Chinese Academy of Sciences kind of run it all for you. And then you'd get the data, and then you decide where you would do the big breakout. I know that sounds complicated, but it's the only way you have of knowing how out of control the experiment is getting, how out of control the live exercise is getting.
You want to see just how wild the fire gets.
Yeah, I guess that would be a good thing, is like, if you knew there was a certain amount of BTUs in a fire that you start, mm-hmm. and then measure the increase in BTUs, it would tell you how much forest is burning, right? And you don't want to burn down the whole forest. You just want enough so that you get tremendous amounts of cash to build a fire station where you want to build the fire station.
God, it really... there's nothing new under the sun. It really does just come down to like making money. Like it's one of those like depressing.
How about this one, Tommy? How about this one where you say you got to dig up uranium because of the war effort? And if we find gold and silver as we're going, well, that's just our tough luck.
if you find some of those, what are they called? What are the giant gold bars called? The good delivery bars. Yeah. If you find those dug in the ground. So, back to the VLPs. So because it's a virus-like particle, not an actual, it's kind of like, there's a book that I thought had great potential, but I thought it kind of sucked. And I might also be saying that because the author never came on my show, but it's called Moby Duck. And it's about this cargo ship full of, one of the containers was full of rubber duckies, and the Connex box fell off wherever, south of Australia in, what, I don't know, 1990. And happens all the time. You just write it off insurance, and sometimes it's shoes, sometimes it's grain and whatever. But these ducks start showing up all over the world weeks and months and years later, and they had different levels of wear on them, and you could tell kind of what the acidity level of the ocean was, which, you know, the UV light, you know, lower on the poles got less, and as it went up to the equator, they were more worn, and that actually led to a ton of understanding about tides and currents, just because of this flow of thing. And people are like, "How come we never realized this before?" And it's just when you said VLPs, that's what made me think about it. These were almost like ducky-like particles. They weren't actual ducks. They didn't need to eat, and they weren't being eaten by sharks. They were not analogs. They were stand-ins. And it conveyed a lot of information without actually having ducks. So you could almost do something like that where it's, yeah, let's see what happens. Throw it on a smokestack or throw it in a whatever, the exhaust pipe of a car, and let's see how this is different than, let's say, the sea spray operations off San Francisco in the 50s, where didn't they actually throw like viruses or something?
No, it was a live mock virus, they called it, but some people did die from it.
Absolutely. Yep. But nonetheless, it was still like a living thing, as opposed to maybe tagging it with whatever, fluorescent, you know, whatever, some irradiated material, and you can track the flow of it. Now, to tie that all back in to the like the x-rays, show me if you see, you know, this presentation on a chest x-ray. It's kind of like a be on the lookout for this person, right? This is a wanted, you know, whatever, this tall, looks like this. He's going to be in the airport today. Does that tie back into digital detection? Do you also want to see how well the existing infrastructure detects it?
Absolutely. This is the whole idea for the national security applications. If you have a Leidos scanner, and your guest, I think you've had him on 10 times, Bob Malone, would be the best person to ask about this because he's an expert in VLPs. His business partner is Leidos. He works with Vapor Bar, and he works with Alchem, who makes the synthetic tobacco. So he would be a really good guy to talk about digital detection with. I mean, he could go at me and say my science is off or whatever. But yeah, if you have the terrorist, if you spray these particles, this is originally the Project Blackjack that I've said, you know, for 6 years now, but the terrorist breathes in the virus-like particle. Remember, it doesn't have to be refrigerated, no cold chain out to the battlefield. I spray the battlefield with a balloon or spray the battlefield with a drone. The, you know, Osama bin Laden or his, you know, Jamal Khashoggi, when he's interviewing, breathes it in. Now it shows up as a virus-like particle lodged in his thing, and it has the terrorist, you know, luminescence, you know, green fluorescent protein or some kind of ferrous that shows up well as a radio emitter. Maybe even you throw in a little radioactive to make things exciting and show up easier. But then they come through the Leidos scanner and you go, that guy goes over this way, and we look at his suitcase versus not looking at a suitcase. So this is where you get into national security. And I respect Bob Malone if he's involved in this, because he can't come out and say, well, George Webb's right. You know, he's got me. He has to say George Webb hates me and is trying to make a living on me, which is all good. He's trying to protect national secrets.
Sure. And for the record, I don't speak for Bob Malone. I don't speak for Andrew Tuff. I don't speak for George Webb. That's just me being protecting my own self. But with all of these things, how do you get someone? So if you have your ear to the ground, can you almost detect the detection? Does that make sense? So like, if I'm trying to see how what the response time is to me shooting in the air, is there an old grizzled cop that it's not his first rodeo, and all the young bucks are like, we got to go to the gunshot? Is there an older guy that's like, somebody's testing the response time? Is there like a detection? I guess that would be that. I guess that would be what you do. That'd be investigative.
Well, in warfare, there's certainly an analog to that. Mike Flynn, I talked to somebody who worked directly for Mike Flynn. He was the highest non-commissioned officer working directly for Mike Flynn. And he said,
he was the former head of the DIA?
Yes. Yeah. But he was still a battle general in Afghanistan.
Wrote the book, Field of Fight.
Yeah. And then working for McChrystal, and McChrystal had the book, you know, where the operators, which was done by the guy who got droned or whatever happened to his car. We don't know.
Oh, Hastings.
Yeah, Hastings. Yeah. But yeah. My point is that, you know,
I hope one day that people, instead of saying he got Hastings, I hope that one day people say, oh, he got Tommy's podcasted.
Yeah. Well, I'm sure that's sweeping across, you know, from the West Coast to East now, and that you've said it, but,
oh God.
But this is the idea here is that Flynn would always feint right. He'd always create some kind of distraction to the right and attack left, always, for some reason. Maybe it's because he knew that his group always would do it right, and he didn't have any thing to worry about. It was always about the same distance that the fake right would be, you know, 5 or 6 miles to the right, and then the main attack would always be here. But a seasoned general would always, if you're Mujahideen and not, if you don't have a encrypted BlackBerry and you haven't already been texted by the U.S. State Department that the U.S. Army's coming, you would just be sitting there going, okay, well, that's Mike fainting right.
He and always does this. And
you'd get your compass out, and you would sweep your thing and say, well, it's about 6 miles. It should be here. So there's a mountain pass. Let's go put the machine guns on each side there, and we'll have a slaughter pen killing.
It's like when your dad's been pulling the same shit on you for the last 30 years, where he pokes your right shoulder and you're like, dude, I know it's you. You know, there's the whole, or like you take a picture with your, and like, I know my dad's throwing up the bunny ears, and he still thinks it's fun, but it's kind of the right, you're not switching it up versus, and I guess that would come from complacency, right? Where you don't have to change your operational, I guess, if it's working for you, right? Like, I'm sure Delta Force uses some classified, you know, as the Delta Force guys always say that I interviewed, TTPs, tactics, techniques, and procedures. If it keeps working and no one knows about it, yeah, keep working. If you get, you know, if you get 100% success rate, never lose any operators. But as they start to figure things out, the only reason you would never change it is if you had total hegemony and no near peer components, versus something, let's say, like IEDs, where you can see the tit for tat, almost real time evolution of, we have the Humvee and then they use an IED. So we have an up armored Humvee and then they use a stronger IED. So we get MRAPs and then they get even bigger IEDs. And then we put the long, like metal rake things out in front of it to set off the IED. Well, then they start putting an ignition mechanism 20 feet out front, and it just goes back and forth. And it's just this like Roadrunner coyote shit, except people are dying. But that's what would go on if you were actually going at one another. So what you're saying is, if I'm picking up, if anyone's listening to this saying, Tommy, your analogies are very stupid, they are. This is how I learn.
Well, there's a classic example of this with Jordan Walker. If you put in a Boston Consulting Group Fed guy, and you actually not only do all lockdowns with this group of people, three other partners, you do all the tag and trace for biosurveillance, you do all of the therapeutics, which is you bring remdesivir from its ignominious death, you resurrect that, and then you force the bid for mRNA vaccines. You do all that with two papers with Jordan Walker, right? And all you have to do, that's in May of 2020. So that establishes the whole tableau, if you will, for mRNA and remdesivir. Then all you have to do at the end of the program is just have him act like he gets embarrassed. And instead of having him go, hey, dude, you're invading my privacy and walking out of the pizza place, you have him dance from one side of the restaurant to the other saying, I can't believe I've been outed. I can't believe, well, you know, go over by the pizza maker and say, I can't believe I'm outed. And then go over by, you know, go work every part of the room possible and make it the longest video possible while you're screaming, I'm a contractor. But people don't see that. They see all the motion and commotion and figure, that's how somebody who's caught acts. That's how my kid acts when I say, hey, your hand was in the cookie jar. And they go, oh, no, I was over here. No, wait, I was over there. And see, people, that's the pattern recognition people are seeing, is when somebody they think is lying, they think that this is their pattern of lying. So he does this dance all over the room, and you say, that's it, we got Pfizer. That proves it. He yelled, I'm a contractor, 8 times. He has all these Boston Fed contracts. He has all these papers he's written with Boston Fed, BCG Fed. He must work for Pfizer. Even though there's no evidence that he ever worked for Pfizer as a non-contractor, none. But people still say, oh, he looked like he was avoiding the truth. He must work for Pfizer. And therefore, all of my hate that I have for Pfizer and all the VAERS injuries, I'm going to say, forget looking into Jordan Walker. Now I want to go after Pfizer. This is the proof. So they're going to put all the proof on this, and it's going to, if it ever gets to Congress, it'll fall apart. So that's how you cover up the other guys. The problem with that happened here, I think, with James O'Keefe is I gave him the Boston Consulting Group paper, and he wasn't in on the con. He was like, hey, this is Jordan Walker. This is the therapeutics. This is the mRNA. Shit, this is great. And he tweeted it out. Well, the next day, they had deleted it all. They pulled it all, which to me says, you stepped out over your skis, you exposed the dark hand, and now there's a coup, right? Now they're trying to get rid of them, even though they just had their most successful. They said that this video has generated 10 times more views than anything that they've done up until now.
So to Jordan Walker, you're saying the blame gets put on Pfizer and it doesn't show who? BCG?
Doesn't show BCG. And BCG is the proxy of the World Economic Forum.
Okay, and that's what I need you to explain to me. Yeah, what is BCG? I understand the actual term Boston Consulting Group, but aside from that, I don't.
You may want to go work for him someday. There's three consultants. Just kidding.
Why?
Well, they're a top management firm that recruits out of the Ivy League, but you're
I'm not Ivy League.
That they'll probably
I'm a public pig. I went to University of Georgia. I went when I interviewed at the University of Southern California Keck School of Medicine. I was the only non-Ivy League guy in there, and they looked down at me like people in first class of Titanic looked at the steerage. I was like dancing with Jack dancing with Rose on top of a whatever fucking thing of cheese with all the farm animals. They looked at me like I was in the with Mary and Jesus and the fucking, you get the point I'm trying to make. They looked at me like a dumb pig. Sorry.
Yeah. 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 No, how about them dogs? Yeah.
No, well, that's what I said, actually. Yeah. They're like, you know, so-and-so Harvard, so-and-so Harvard, so-and-so UCLA, so-and-so Yale. Tom was like, go dogs. Sorry. Keep going.
No, that's pretty good. Well, what was the question? Oh,
Boston Consulting Group and why you said they're going to hire me, but they're not because I'm a dumb Irish pig.
There's three, they call them the MBB, MBB, which is McKinsey, who ran Operation Warp Speed. And then there's Bain Capital, Mitt Romney, that's takeover companies, raid their pension funds, sell out the thing on a leverage buyout where there's no cash left, make money on the pump and dump, and then leave it as a carcass for somebody else to clean up. That's that Bain. Bill Bain, by the way, who started Bain Capital, came from BCG, so they're very intimately connected.
So incestuous, okay.
Yeah. And then the third one is McKinsey, which is kind of the grand old man of the three, been around probably the longest and probably has the most prestige. That's probably the Harvard. They're the ones who did Operation Warp Speed.
Wait, what was the second B? You said McKinsey, Bain.
Bain and Company, yeah.
But you said so MBB.
The other one's Boston Consulting Group. McKinsey, Bain.
Gotcha.
Boston Consulting, yeah. So they wanted to make McKinsey kind of the Trump. They wanted to expose McKinsey to Trump for all the logistics. And they knew Trump would naturally gravitate to that because he's a guy that's, you know, how much concrete do we need to move from out in New Jersey to Fat Tony Salerno?
Yeah.
To pour the pilings today.
Yeah.
You know, how many dump trucks do I need? You know, that he's thinking logistically, right? But the communication strategy for vaccine acceptance was the contract for Boston Fed, Boston Consulting with this Jordan Walker. So he was on that team for vaccine acceptance.
That the actual, like, I think it's in the Twitter files, the actual, like, PSYOP about basically how to gaslight people into, and if they don't say this, you, it's a flow chart of, and if they don't say that, you point to here, and then you humiliate them, you ostracize, you know, all shit that we kind of spelled out how bad it was in the Nuremberg trials.
You let it go for a while. Whatever. So you can define the social network, but you have Lady Gaga, you know, go get her vaccine. You have Sean Penn say that people who don't get the vaccine shouldn't live.
I mean, listen, if they're the ones that duped you, you deserve to get. I know. Sorry, I keep interrupting you. If they're the ones that duped you, you deserve to get got.
You're right about the communication strategy was about 99% social media. There's very little real protesting anymore. And if it is, you just black it out and you just have some other event the same day. You have Antifa go bust some windows, or have Antifa infiltrate and bust some windows and call them all right wing, far right conspiracists. So most of the back talk, if you will, was they modeled it at Event 201 in New York with George Gao, Chinese Academy of Sciences. I mean, there's no hiding here, along with the Gates Foundation, along with Klaus Schwab, right? And they said, this is going to be the attack strategy. I went to England to this Newtown.
It's not Welcome Trust, right?
Newburgh. Yeah. I went to Welcome Trust in London, but Newburgh is where this Brigade 77 is, and you can spawn 100 Tommy Kerrigan profiles. With different names, you know, you might have Tommy O'Keefe and all this, but you could just basically say one thing and it'll propagate out on like StreamYard on 100 different platforms, and it'll be a force multiplier for your thing. So it's like George Webb discovers Jordan Walker, contract number, puts out the 23-page contract on the web, shows how it's the communication strategy for Operation Warp Speed. What do we do now at Brigade 77? Oh, George Webb, CIA. George Webb works for Pfizer. I can't wait to see George Webb's 1099 from Pfizer. Like, totally irrelevant. I want to go after Pfizer. I want to go after Moderna. I want to go, you know, Remdesivir, same color, is made by Pfizer in McPherson, Kansas. So this is the strategy here. It's mainly social media. It's, like you said, gaslighting, humiliation, gang sort of swarming on people, Scientology type swarming on people. And it worked. And now when the operation's over, now you can introduce the hero of Elon Musk, and he can be giving all the freedoms back. Like it's really Elon Musk that did it. No, the operation is over.
Yeah.
Whatever the results were, the things, the objectives were, those are over now.
It's what was it? I think we gotta wrap this one up in a minute because I have another show. But it's I think they're called Hercules teams. It was like a couple months after 9/11. It was these like juiced up almost SWAT teams. SWAT teams are already, you know, militarized, but I mean like another level. It's basically like proto military, and they would just unannounced kind of show up to random landmarks in New York City. I remember reading this when I was in like fifth or sixth grade as it was happening. Whatever, Grand Central, Ellis Island, Empire State Building. They would just kind of show up, even if there was no reason to be there. They would show up and like all get out of the van and kind of just like swarm an entrance. And it was, at first people liked it, right? Because it's, oh, we're secure. And then they started to kind of get back at it and kind of criticize it. And then I think it was Giuliani who eventually like peeled them back, and everyone was like cheering on Giuliani. It's like, dude, Giuliani started it.
Yeah,
that's
total full flight of the arrow. You know,
that's me closing down Tommy's podcast, and people are like, it's about time that hate speech show has ended, and I'm getting applauded. Someone's like, it's Tommy though. Tommy closed down Tommy's podcast.
Yeah. Yeah, isn't Tommy incredible? You know, he shut started down his own speech. Yeah. Yeah,
it's,
well, Giuliani's a whole different.
He's an old bag of worms.
We'll get to the next time, but this is why I say the COVID operation's over. If it was to ready America for the mRNA platform and all the social distancing and the biosurveillance. Okay, that's one thing. If it's to weaken our immune systems, like Bob Malone says with the T cells, that's another thing. But the next thing is coming now, and I want to expose what they did in the first one to stop the second one. That's the bottom line here. That's my only dog in the fight. I only work for Buy Me a Coffee. my 1099 will be buy me a coffee. So there you go. That's who I work for.
I work for the KGB. full disclosure, I get paid.
You're the only one.
I am the sole. It's just me, and the money's worthless, and I don't get anything from it. But nonetheless, my 1099's in Cyrillic. Mr. George Webb, thank you for your time, sir. Thank you for letting me steal you on Super Bowl Sunday. I swear, if a Chinese balloon shows up over the Super Bowl, it's going to be the greatest thing ever.
H5N1, super spreader event. Here we go. Scottsdale, watch out.
Oh, God. Military Games Part 2.
There you go.
Well, you know what? You know what the upside to all these pandemics and UFO sightings and pending thermonuclear war is? Is that a lot of content for my podcast. Before it ends in a blinding flash of thermonuclear death, I'm going to trend. And you know what? I think all I can really ask for in this life. George, thanks, sir. I love you, brother. Thanks for coming on here. Stay safe, everybody. Go enjoy the Super Bowl. Till next.